Thank you, Paul. It's a pleasure to be here. I was here in 1996, the only other time I've been at the Fields Institute. It's a great place. Perhaps the more formal title of my talk ought to be V1 Periodic Homotopy Groups of P-Compact Groups. What I've done is I'm nearly completed a long project of computing all of the V1 periodic homotopy groups of the family of spaces called P-compact groups. And I'll tell you what both of those things mean in just a minute. And the way that invariant theory comes into play is that associated to each P-compact group is a family of invariant polynomials. And what I'll be showing you is how I can go directly from those invariant polynomials to the V1 periodic homotopy groups of those spaces. So first of all, I'm going to tell you what these two families of words mean. So first of all, V1 periodic homotopy groups. This is a first approximation to the actual homotopy groups of topological spaces. So not stable homotopy groups, but ordinary homotopy groups of topological spaces. And this is a theory, P-local theory associated to a prime P. And this is essentially the portion of the actual homotopy groups of a topological space detected by K-theory localized at the prime P. And in 1989, I computed the V1 periodic homotopy groups of the unitary groups at the odd primes P. I gave a formula involving Stirling numbers that gave a complete calculation of this. I gave a talk on this in 1989, and after the talk, Mimura, who was an expert on homotopy theory of Lie groups, suggested that I try to compute the V1 periodic homotopy groups of all the compact simple Lie groups. So that's the matrix groups and the five exceptional groups, and then at all primes P. It's a separate calculation for each prime P. And so I spent a lot of time working on that project and finally completed it in 2003. Computed the V1 periodic homotopy groups of all compact simple Lie groups at all primes P. So that's V1 periodic homotopy groups. Now, P-compact groups are a generalization to homotopy theory of the notion of compact Lie group. And the theory, the idea of P-compact groups was introduced by Dwyer and Wilkerson in the early 90s. And in order to have a well-developed theory, it needed to be that they are working with P-completed spaces. And so really this is a generalization of P completions of compact simple Lie groups. And so I'll tell you what a P compact group is. It's actually, the way they describe it is as a pair of spaces, BX and X. So the B is like a classifying space kind of idea, but you have a pair of spaces, P-complete spaces. Don't ask me what P-complete means. I couldn't tell you, really. And such that X is the loop space, or up to homotopy, the loop space on the other space, BX, and the cohomology of the space X with coefficients in the mod P coefficients is finite. So actually, the X here is redundant because it's just the loop space on BX. But X is the space which generalizes the idea of compact simple Lie group, because it is a space which has a classifying space, it has a multiplication, and it has finite cohomology. So the P-compact groups have very recently, a complete classification of these has been completed by Anderson and Grödahl and other European mathematicians, and there's going to be one paper in the Annals of Math and another paper at the Prime 2 where they know now what all these spaces are. And the construction of the spaces has been known for a long time. What is new is showing that there are no other examples of P-compact groups other than the things that can be achieved by sort of standard constructions. And so I'm going to tell you about the standard construction. And it has to do with reflection groups. So first of all, a reflection, and I'll start out with complex reflections, is an endomorphism, a linear transformation from Cn to itself of finite order. So after a finite number of iterations, you're back at the identity, which leaves a hyperplane fixed, a codimension 1 hyperplane. And so that means there's one complex orthogonal dimension, and in that orthogonal dimension it can be multiplication by a complex root of unity. Then a complex reflection group is a finite subgroup of the general linear group of Cn generated by reflections. These have been studied for a long time, and a classification of these was given in 1954 by Shepard and Todd in the Canadian Math Society Journal. And what they showed was that, somewhat analogously to Lie groups, that there are three infinite families, and 34 special individual examples. And you'll be seeing a list of those on a transparency in just a few minutes. So the reflection groups have a very special property. If G is any subgroup, or a subgroup of the general linear group of Cn, then G acts on polynomial algebra in n generators, these n's being the same. You just take the action of G on the standard basis here and then extend it multiplicatively over the polynomials here. Actually, I think you have to do a dual thing, but essentially it's a straightforward relationship here. And so when you have an action of a group on a polynomial algebra like this, you have invariant polynomials. The polynomials which are left unchanged by the action of all elements of the group. And so it's a theorem of Shepard and Todd and Chevalier that the invariant, this is the way you denote the ring of invariants, that this is a polynomial algebra itself if and only if G is a reflection group. And so that means, yes?
It's not clear why a group would preserve integer coefficients.
I guess I'm not sure about that. That's a very good question, and perhaps I need to say complex polynomials. I think you're probably right about that. There's a lot of this that I'm not an expert on. I'm an expert on V1 periodic homotopy groups, but on the p-compact groups and the reflection groups, I'm really just learning. But I think I know what I need to know to do what I'm doing. So you're probably right about that. But anyway, there is a result here about this ring of invariants being a polynomial algebra if and only if G is a reflection group. And so that means that when you have a reflection group, you have a finite set of homogeneous polynomial generators of this ring of invariants. And so Shepard and Todd listed the degrees as polynomials of the generators of the invariant ring. Now, the way that this relates to topology is, or a way anyway, is that, well, if the, the group there, the reflection group, could be considered as a group of complex matrices. And if the elements in those matrices, If the elements of G has entries in the p-adic integers, then you can form interesting topological spaces. Namely, you could take the p-completion of a product of complex projective spaces, or maybe better thought of as take an Eilenberg-MacLane space on the p-adic integers, take a n-fold product of these, and then, so G will be acting on the n-fold product of the p-adic integers, and so G will be acting on this space. So G would act on this space. I think actually to do this properly, you need to have a free action and you want to take homotopy invariants, but I'm not going to worry about that. So you can, essentially you can take this space here acted on by G and take the set space of invariants under that action, and that gives you a topological space. Maybe I'll put a homotopy invariance just to make it right, but don't ask me what that is either. You get a space which is going to be our BX, and at least if the prime P here does not divide the order of the group G. The theory is more complicated if P divides the order of G. If P does not divide the order of G, then this will give us a P compact group, and you'll get that the cohomology of this BX with coefficients in the p-adic integers here will be a polynomial algebra on the invariant on the invariant polynomials, on the generating set of the invariant polynomials, on the generating invariant polynomials. So, Clark and Ewing were the first ones, I believe, to exploit this, and they wrote a paper in which they listed, for all of Shepard and Todd's examples, they listed which were the relevant primes, which, for which primes P did G have entries in ZP hat, and so you could get a space here whose cohomology algebra is a polynomial algebra. And I want to switch over to slides now for at least part of the, well, I'm going to be showing some slides, and the first slide is going to be from Clark and Ewing's paper. And it's going to be a little bit awkward with the lights, I'm afraid. I'm going to leave the board down. I'll be able to write on the sideboard. I'm going to leave this down, be able to write on the sideboards, but Tony, you may need to have to jump up and down for... So, this is sort of a famous table of Clark and Ewing. Their real interest here, I mean, this was before anybody's thinking about P-compact groups as generalizations of Lie groups, I think, but their interest was that there was a question of Steenrod's about what polynomial algebras can be realized as the cohomology of topological spaces, and that's the way they preface this, that you can realize polynomial algebras on, I should have said that the cohomology of the BX here is a polynomial algebra on the invariant polynomials where the generators XI have grading 2 because they're in the cohomology of this. The X's, these are like CP infinities, and the X's are like the generators of the CP infinity. And then these polynomials here are polynomials in, are homogeneous polynomials in the X's, and these are the degrees of those generators. And so here are the three infinite families, and the relevant primes for them, and then the 34 special cases are numbers 4 through 37 in this table. And this is the numbering of Shepard and Todd, and all of the workers up to this date use the numbering of these spaces or groups given by Shepard and Todd. So, in this table, the matrix groups appear among those the numbers 1 through 3, the three infinite families, include the matrix groups and also other spaces. That is, the matrix groups, you get your BX here, and then its loop space is the space with finite cohomology. It's a space that generalizes the Lie groups. And so for these reflection groups in the infinite families there, you form the BX and then form the X, and that will be the P completion of the matrix groups, and there are other spaces among them. And then the five exceptional Lie groups appear in the table here. E6, E7, and E8 are these ones, and F4 is right here, and G2 appears embedded in the, one of the infinite families there. So, this is a family of spaces generalizing compact simple V groups. I had computed the V1 periodic homotopy groups of all the compact simple V groups, so it was natural for me to try to extend my methods and calculations to include all of these spaces. And I have accomplished that this now. Except that is one example that I'm still working on, but I'm very confident that I'll be able to finish it within a week or so of getting back home. And you may have noticed here where the Clark and Ewing are excluding certain primes. These are the cases where the prime divides the order of the group, and in that case, the cohomology of the B, well, the whole this construction does not work naturally, and there are special constructions of the spaces were required, and these were done mostly by Agua Day. And so in these examples here, where P equals 5 in these two and P equals 7 here, are cases that I'll be focusing my attention on, and special constructions of those spaces have been done, and it is in those spaces where my work with the invariant polynomials will be particularly necessary. So, what I've found is that, tell me if you can read the board with the lights off like this, because I'm going to be switching to another transparency in just a minute. So if I can write big here, maybe you can read this. In most cases, I can tell the homotopy type of the space X as the X in the P compact group associated to these reflection groups has the homotopy type of a product of spheres and sphere bundles over spheres and spaces slightly more complicated than that built by spheres from several fibrations. These are what we call spherically resolved spaces. And moreover, all of these factors here are also factors in the product decomposition of SUN, the unitary group, localized or completed at the prime P. Mimura, Nishida, and Toda in the 70s showed that SUN localized at P splits as a product of P minus 1 spaces, and these spaces, it will be among those. And so I'd like to show you, well, no, not quite yet.
These are all odd dimensional spheres.
Yeah, all odd dimensional spheres. That's right. Thank you. Essentially, it's the this is the generators of the BX. I should have said this. And so the cohomology of X, of the regroup-like space, will be an exterior algebra on generators of dimension one less than these because you're looping. So like this one here, the X, its cohomology would be an exterior algebra on classes of dimension 23 and 39. So, in the infinite cases, the fact that the X space is of that form was proved by Castellana using a lot of the P compact group machinery. What are very complicated methods. And I was in the sort of discovering this from my own point of view, and then it was pointed out to me that this had been proved in generality for the infinite families by Castellana. And so I then focused my attention on the finite the 34 special cases, and I get what I think is quite an attractive result here. That, okay, so this is not including, this is the cases where P does not divide the order of G. That's what they call non-modular cases. And there are just five modular cases that I'll be talking about after this. So this is the, all the, so if the prime is large, then the space X is going to split as a product of spheres of just the obvious dimensions related to the generators of the reflection group. And so there are only out of the 34 special cases and all the infinitely many primes, there are these 31 cases only where the thing is not a product of spheres. And in every one of these cases, it's they split up into this nice form. So this this B1135, this means a sphere bundle, and sphere bundle S11 in the fiber, S35 in the base, and that the attaching map for those first two cells is alpha 1, which is the first element in the P primary homotopy groups of spheres. And in all of these, and this, like this one here, is built up from spheres of these four dimensions by fibrations, and the attaching maps between the any two consecutive generators are alpha 1. But this space, it's not just built up from these four cells, it also has the product cells in the exterior algebra. So for any distinct collection of these, there is a product cell as well. And so so I can prove that that in all the non-modular cases that the X space is of this form. And my work with SUN easily allows me to write down nice formulas for the V1 periodic homotopy groups of all of these spaces. So I'm going to say a word about how I prove this. I'm going to focus my attention for most of the rest of the talk on the case of G29 here. And I'm going to say about how I can prove that at these primes it has this form, and then mostly focus on the prime 5, which is the modular example. So I'm not going to be doing a lot of writing on the board. Also, I have five copies of my transparencies for anyone who might be interested in what I'm talking about here, so you don't have to copy down that table in your notes. Okay. Right. All right. Great. I'll be happy to do that, too. Okay. So all right, so for G29, we call the space X29, and its cohomology groups with, I'd rather use finite mod P coefficients is an exterior algebra on classes of degree 7, 15, 23, and 39. Now, here's the easy part of the talk. 39 minus 7 equals 2p minus 1 if p equals 17. You can check that if you wish. What this means is that if you're localized at a prime greater than 17, then all of the steam rod operations in this space will be trivial. And so then you can use the unstable atom spectral sequence, or maybe you don't even need such complicated machinery, but the way I like to do it, think about the unstable atom spectral sequence will tell me that if P is greater than 17, that there are elements in the homotopy groups of this space in pi 7, pi 15, pi 23, pi 2039, which realize these cohomology classes, and so they give you maps from the spheres, F15. Going to break all the chalk here in the first talk, I think. From these spheres into the space, and now, since this space has a multiplication, it's a loop space, you can take the product of these maps, and you get a map from the product of those spheres. Into your space X, and this will be a cohomology isomorphism, and therefore localized at P, it will be an equivalence. And so that works for all the primes greater than 17. If P equals 17, it's easy to see that the first steam rod operation will relate the P1 of the 7-dimensional class will equal the 39-dimensional class. This is shown by going to the space BX, where it's a polynomial algebra, and using the unstable property of the Steenrod algebra to of the Steenrod operations to see that you have to have, in order to satisfy that, you have to have P1 of the 8-dimensional class there equaling the 40-dimensional class plus products. And then when you loop it down, the products go away and you get this fact. And I think this is well known to people like Wilkerson, probably to Paul. So that means that you can make a map from the, it means, the P1 thing means that that 39 cell is attached to the 7 cell with an alpha 1 attaching map. The first Steenrod operation is closely related to the first homotopy group, alpha 1. And so you can then show that you can make a map from the sphere bundle space here into X29. Now this is localized at the prime 17 because you'll use your unstable atom spectral sequence again to compute the homotopy groups of this, and you'll have an element in pi 7 and you'll get this map, and then you have to extend that map over the 39 cell, and then there's a product cell in dimension 46, and it's easy to see from the homotopy groups of this that there are no obstructions to doing that. And so you can make this map, and it will send the 39 cell, the 39 dimensional cohomology class across because of the action of the Steenrod algebra matching up in the two spaces. And so, and then as before, the homotopy groups for these two spheres will be in there, so you get maps from the spheres in, and then you use the product structure there to get a map from the product space here into there. It will be a cohomology isomorphism and a homotopy equivalence. And so that's how I would show this case here. And the case of P equals 13 follows similarly. But now the case of P equals 5 is much more complicated. The space involved a special construction by Aguadet, which I don't understand, but it does have the property that the cohomology of the BX corresponds to the invariant polynomials in the reflection group. Let me see. So the case, okay, so the case of P equals 5, I expected, and it is in fact the case, that the generating cells are going to be related in this way, with an alpha 1 attaching map from here to here, an alpha 1 attaching map from here to here, and an alpha 2 attaching map from here to here. This is the way that they are related in SU20 also, and I'll be talking about that at the end of the talk if I have time. But alpha 2 attaching maps are not detected by primary steam rod operations. So the alpha 1 attaching maps is easy to see those using steam rod operations. This is detected by a secondary cohomology operation, which I find very difficult to work with. And it's detected in K-theory, and that's the way that I like to get at it. So what I'm going to show you is that how I use the invariant polynomials in the reflection group thing to compute the Adams operations in the K-theory of X with coefficients in the 5 adic integers, get the Adams operations. There is a way to use that information to compute the V1 periodic homotopy groups, which I will show you a little bit about, and then I will talk about its implications for this attaching map here. So first of all, I needed to know the invariant polynomials for the, well, for the cohomology of the space, obtained from the work by the people on the reflection groups. And I had a hard time finding the information about the invariant polynomials. I wrote to quite a few experts who didn't know where I could find this, and I thought that for all these examples somewhere, they ought to have written down all the invariant polynomials in all of the examples. And actually, so there's 4 invariant polynomials for this group, and I actually think that they have not been written, all 4 of them have not been written down in print anywhere. But I finally found, there was an allusion in Shepard and Todd to this paper where it tells what the invariant polynomials are. And this is a paper that you may not be familiar with, a paper of Mashke's written in 1887 in German, in which he computed the invariant polynomials. And there are 4 of them, and he wrote down the first 3 and told how to find the 4th one by just, well, he wrote down some polynomials and then said, and then you take symmetric polynomials in these polynomials, and he wrote down the first 3 and said how to get the 4th one, but I think probably his computer wasn't quite as fast as mine. So here are the 4 invariant polynomials for the group G29. So the notation here with the M, this is what's called the monomial symmetric polynomial. It seems to be, in the people who work with symmetric polynomials, M seems to be the standard letter for this one. So for example, if I write M8, 4, this is the smallest symmetric polynomial containing the monomial x1 to the 8th, x2 to the 4th, the sum over all I not equal to j of those. So those are the, that's what these things, these are. And so, I mean, this 4th one, it's not huge polynomial, but it would probably be a little bit hard to work that one out by hand with any confidence. So those are the invariant polynomials. They give you the cohomology of this space, but what I need is the K-theory of the space. And in order to get at that, I use a result of Jean Array and Asha, who wrote a general paper, General Results of a K-Theory of P-Compact Groups, and they showed that the K-Theory for any P-Compact group, the K-Theory of the BX here, is just the invariant. First of all, it's going to be a polynomial algebra on, like, corresponding polynomials sort of corresponding to these, but they're not going to be the same polynomials as this, and it will be the invariance of the so that space, that product of KZP hat comma 2, we call that BT. It's like the classifying space of a maximal torus, and that the reflection group will act on the K-theory of the BT, and the invariance under that action will just give you the K-theory of BX. And this here is also a polynomial algebra on two-dimensional generators, but the action of the group here on this is not exactly the same as it was in the cohomology situation. And so I'll show you how those are related. That's correct. That's a general result. I think it, that, yeah, even works in the modular cases as I read it. Okay. So you have the churn character, and I want to look at the churn character, first of all, from rational K-theory to rational cohomology. This is a ring homomorphism, and it, okay, and you have it also in the BT here, in the maximal torus situation. And this sits inside here as an invariance, and this sits inside here as the invariance, and the action of the group G corresponds under the homomorphism here, and I'll show you how the action of the group G is related in here and in here. Namely, let's call the generators down here YI. So in my case, it would be Y1, Y2, Y3, Y4. I have been calling them X, but I want to call the X's over here. So YI is a generator in the second cohomology group there, Y1, Y2, Y3, Y4. Now, the churn character here is an exponential function, and so from that, it's easy to see that if XI is the standard generator here corresponding to the Hopf's bundle minus 1, then that the log series, I call it L0 of X, which is the power series for log of 1 plus X, that maps to the generator over there. And then the action of the group on these classes here will just correspond to the action of the group on those classes. And so the invariants in here, which give you this, will just be those polynomials applied to the L0, the log series of these. But it's not quite that easy, because that's in rational K-theory. So the rational K-theory here, it's rational K-theory, will be polynomials rationals, I guess, actually, I think it's a power series algebra, on those polynomials, like the F4 applied to the log series in the generating variables. F4 up to F20 with the log series put in instead of the X's. The problem is, though, that I want to know the K-theory with p-adic coefficients, p-adic integers as coefficients. And these polynomials, well, here we're at the prime 5, and these polynomials have 5s in the denominator, so these are not in the p-adic, do not have p-adic coefficients. But any rational combination of these is an invariant, so what I need to do is I need to find rational combinations of these which have no 5s in the denominator. And I can do that by manipulation of polynomials, and I do that using Maple, and I come up with this result right here that turns out that so you get these complicated things involving products and all, but what I really am only going to care about are the linear terms, because, see, this is in the BX, and then I'm going to take the loops on that to go to the X, and all the products go away. So what I care about is the linear parts here, and that only goes up through dimension 20. So I can compute these polynomials algorithmically, and I only need to go up through grading 20. And so I get this information. The theorem of Jeanneret and Ossert guarantees me that I could continue this procedure through all gradings, but I don't care about the product terms, and all the rest of the terms will be product terms. So the K-theory of the BX will be a polynomial algebra on power series which begin in this way. The fourth one will just be F20 in dimension 20, and then product terms after that. And then when I loop it down, the product terms go away, and I get the K-theory in X. I'm running a little low on time, so maybe I'll not say quite as much as I was going to say. This is my last transparency. Using those polynomials that I had just showed you, I get a change of basis from a basis on which the Adams operations act diagonally to the basis in which I am interested. And I just use the formula from linear algebra, the P inverse M times P formula, to get a formula for the Adams operations on the Q up there is the indecomposables in the first K-theory group of this space. And so I use the linear terms there to give me a change of basis matrix, and I am able to write down the formula for the Adams operations in the space in which I am interested here. And so now I want to get to the Z1 periodic homotopy groups of X, and Dausfield had a very influential result that says that at the odd primes P, this is given by, you take the indecomposables in the K-theory of the space, and, well, here, let's just do it for the prime 5, it works for any odd prime, mod out by the axon of the Adams operation psi 5 and the Adams operation psi 2 minus 2 to the t. 2 is here, it's a generator of a group of unity. And the t here corresponds to this t. So for every homotopy group, you have a different number that goes in there. And so I can plug in k equal 5 and k equal 2 into that matrix and get integers. And I have developed effective methods for simplifying these groups using MAPLE. I've done this in a lot of my work with the compact Lie groups. And so from that, from this result and that result, I can fairly easily obtain the, using MAPLE a lot, the V1 periodic homotopy groups of these spaces. I mean, it's quite a nice form, and it's the kind of form that was coming up for the compact Lie groups as well. Maybe a little bit hard for you to read, but I was going to explain it a little more on the board, but you get the transparencies if you want. But these exponents here, they have to do with the exponent of 5 in the t related to the homotopy group minus, and you get these funny shifts, which I don't really understand why they come in, except the numbers make them come in. And then as these exponents get larger, the homotopy groups get larger, but they can't get any larger than, well, 8 or 12 or 20 in the largest case. Anyway, if you study those formulas, they're really pretty nice to work with, those formulas, and that's a complete formula for the V1 periodic homotopy groups of this space. And the same thing works for the case of X31 at the prime 5, and it will work for X34 at the prime 7, but the polynomials are much more complicated. What I'd like to do in about the last 2 minutes here is to talk about the relationship of this with SUN. The Adams operations tell you, something in that Adams operation formula there tells you about this alpha 2 attaching map. And so it looks like, the X29 is, it's built up. It's an exterior algebra. It's built up by product cells from cells like this. And SU20 localized at the prime 5 is a product of spaces, and one of them is built up by sphere bundles from cells of these dimensions. So you've got this extra cell in here, but you can collapse it. You can easily see, well, Yamaguchi showed that there's a map from this space into S31. So then you can take the fiber of that, and this will go away, and you'll get a space that looks exactly like this. And I can compute that the Adams operations in K-theory match up. They're isomorphic Adams modules, isomorphic V1 periodic homotopy groups, but I cannot prove that these are homotopy equivalent because there are too many non-zero homotopy groups for me to use an obstruction theoretic argument. Now, the workers in P-compact groups are interested in relating these spaces to the FUs, and so you might think that there is a general fact that this will necessarily be related to this for some general reason. But I don't think that's the case, because I believe that in the next case of X31, where the cells are like this, and in the SU space, you've got the 31 in there, but the 31 is attached to the 47, and you can't collapse the 31 away. So I believe that for X31, it cannot be related to an SU space, and that might be the only case of a P-compact group which cannot be related to a unitary group. So I think that's where I'll stop.